which is in Ezra 7 through 8. So if you want to be turning to Ezra 7 through 8, we will be looking at that book. So Ezra 7 through 10. Ezra 7 through 10. I think I might have said Ezra 7 through 8. Yeah, I did. Okay. Ezra 7 through 10. So let's begin looking at the verses. These are the chapters that tell about this second coming, which was led by Ezra. So we want to look at the facts that are given. All right. So let's all get ready to do a little reading here. Ron, how about you start us off with Ezra 7 through Ezra 7 through 6 or 7-6. Ezra 7-6. All right, Ezra. Ezra was a ready scribe. That means that he was a very proficient scribe. He was a very capable scribe. He was also a priest. We see that from the context. And this Artaxerxes, look at 7:1, Artaxerxes there. That title is used several times. It's used in the early part of Ezra 1 through 6. It is used as a synonym title for Cambyses, even though Cambyses is not mentioned as such, but that Artaxerxes is used to refer to him too. But here, you see in 7:1, you see that Artaxerxes there? This is a different one. This is called... Now, are you ready for this? Artaxerxes Longimanus. The Longimanus means the long-handed. Now, you can decide. You can decide what that was all about. But anyway, he was called Artaxerxes Longimanus. And he ruled from 465 to 425. So he is the one that is ruling at this time. He rules during the time of Ezra, Nehemiah, and also Malachi. So here is Ezra now, who is going to lead a return. This is not going to be as big a return as the other one was. All right, 7 through 10. Okay, Jimmy, how about reading that one? All right, so we don't need to get too hung up on the details here. It says that it was in verse 9, verse 8, he came to Jerusalem in the fifth month of the seventh year, and then in verse 9, on the first month of the first year began he to go up from Babylon, and on the first day of the fifth month. So how many months would that be? The journey, 4 months. Took a journey of 4 months. And what had Ezra done? What had he set himself to do? All right. To teach the law, to obey the law of the Lord, he had set his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach Israel the statutes. So that was the job that he had come to do. So in 7:14, look at that one. Okay, Jeff, how about reading that one? All right, so this is Artaxerxes who is telling Ezra about what he is to do. That is going to be his job. So he's going to come, and he's being sent by the king and his seven counselors. Now, you might remember that those seven counselors played a part even in the story of Esther. That begins from the way that Darius took over the kingdom. When he took over the kingdom, he had the help of seven conspirators, co-conspirators. And they insisted that one of the prices of their being his conspirators to help him to take the kingdom over was that they always have immediate access to him. So they are the inner circle. So here we see all those years later, that practice still continues. They are the inner circle. So he says, "You are sent of the king and his seven counselors to inquire regarding Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of God which is in your hand." So he is to go down and look after the religious situation to see about the religious affairs that are going on. How are things going? Well, now, you know, depending on our calling upon your knowledge of the Jews and their behavior, how would you guess things are going? Not well spiritually. Now, they're not going well spiritually. And have they rebuilt the walls yet? No. What have they done? By this time they've also built the temple. They have built the temple because this return is in 458. And so, see, that was back. The first return is 536. They started building the temple in 520, finished it in 516. So that's done. So far as the temple is concerned, that's all right. That's good. The walls haven't been built yet. But what about the spiritual situation? See, that's what Ezra is coming back to look at. And don't we all realize that a lot of times the physical stuff gets taken care of when the spiritual stuff doesn't? Because a lot of times the spiritual stuff is harder to take care of. So the king is sending him back to check into that, to look at the situation and see how things are going. All right, so look on now in 7:24 through 26, because this is continuing the letter of Artaxerxes. Okay, Travis, how about reading 24 through 26? Wait a minute. Did you start in 24? 24 through 26. Okay, all right. It's just a little different. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Confiscation. Okay, so you are reading exactly the right one. It was just worded a little bit different here. But do you get the point here? How would you like to have that blessing? Basically, what was the blessing? What was he saying? Don't what? Don't tax. How would you like to have that blessing? Whew! Don't tax them. The priests, the Levites, the singers, the porters, and the Nethinim are servants of this house of God. In other words, this is all concerning the temple. And everything, that's this center, that's kind of viewed here as the center of the worship. So those that are primarily concerned with that, they are not to be taxed. And do you get the idea that Ezra has a good bit of authority? What's he to appoint? Judges, magistrates, people like that. And if you find somebody that doesn't know the law of your God, then what are you supposed to do? Now, if you teach him, then is he supposed to obey it? If he doesn't obey it, then what? Punish him by whatever means. You know, that's a pretty broad thing here, you know, whether it be what? Death, exile, confiscation of goods, or imprisonment. Now, that would be, I think, highly motivating. Highly motivating. But, of course, the thing about the law is that if they did do it for that reason, what would it accomplish? But nevertheless, the backing of the law, the Persian Empire, you do this or else. So, Ezra has the authority to come back and get everything set in order. So look now in 8:15 through 20 as he gathers the people together for the journey. Okay, so this is going to be 8:15 through 20. Steve Parker, can you read that? Cassifia. Oh, man, I apologize. I really loaded you down. Well, what when he talked about the temple servant, what did the rest of you have in your translation? Nethinim. The Nethinim go back, so far as we can tell, it goes all the way back to those Gibeonites. You know what I'm talking about? Remember when Israel first invaded the land? Remember the city of Gibeon felt like that they were done for unless they tricked Israel into making a treaty with them. So remember what they did, the deception they pulled? They pretended to be from a long way off so that they could come. You know, they wouldn't be a city in the land there, so they could make a covenant with Israel. So they put on old clothes, and they took molded bread, and worn-out shoes, and everything. And so here they came, and I've always pictured them, you know, as being just hustling right along until they get to the last hill before they walk over into the Israelite camp. And then they walk over, and they come into the camp, and you can look at their shoes. Man, those shoes are worn out. And so when the Israelites question, hey, how do we know that you're not from right here in the land? Well, look at us. We've come from a long way. You know, our shoes are worn out. This bread was taken fresh out of the oven. So the Israelites said, Well, okay, that appears to be the case. So they made a treaty with them. And then, what did they find out about 3 days later? They're from right there in the land. They're right there in the land. So Israel said, now we made the covenant with you. So we're not going to kill you, we're not going to destroy you, but we are going to make you servants to gather the wood and to haul the water for the service of the tabernacle. And then later on the temple. So they came to be called the Nethinim because the word Nethinim comes from the word Nathan or Natan, which means given or to give. So the Nethinim is the given ones. See that? The given ones. So, Steve, your translation says the temple servants. Well, that's who they were. They had become very respected in Israel. So they worked and assisted. Now, they were not Levites proper. But it seems that they had almost become de facto Levites, because of their close association with the temple. And through the years, they had become very respected. And so, Ezra says, we're going to need some of them. We need to get this whole thing set up. We need to get it organized. So he's gathered the people there for the journey. And this is kind of interesting here. Steve Melton, how about reading 8:21 through 23? Okay, all right, all right. Jim, how about, can you read that? So what had Ezra told the king, you know, regarding this journey? Oh, we can make the journey. Why, our God will be with us. And, well, after he had said that, then how would it go to say, hey, by the way, could you send a big army with us? And the king might say, well, I thought that your God was going to go with you and he was going to protect you. So Ezra says, I was ashamed. Pretty interesting. I was ashamed to ask for that. Well, was his confidence borne out? Yes. They made the journey safely. And how much was, how long was the journey? Remember earlier? 4 months. So they made that 4 month journey. He was ashamed to ask for an escort. But so they set out in 31 through, Paul, how about reading 31 through 36?
Silver and the gold and the articles were weighed in the house of our God.
So the children of the captivity, they made a safe journey. And the credit, what was there any danger that they were in? What did they have with them? Gold and silver. That would be a tasty morsel for thieves and everything like that. So there was danger. But they came there, they remained there 3 days, and then what did they transfer? What did they deliver? The gold and the vessels and everything like that by weight. See, there was a list made, and when it was turned over, you see how they were taking thought honorable for the in the sight of all men? Taking thought for things honorable. They had a record. They were delivering it, making sure everything was just as it should be. And when these sacrifices were offered, who offered those sacrifices? Now, you can read it if you want to. You know, I mean, if you need to read it, you can do that and then tell me. Was it the people that lived there at Jerusalem? It's the people who had made the journey. Why would they particularly feel like offering sacrifices? Because they got there safely. They it was gratitude. That's right. They were offering those sacrifices out of gratitude. So, they offered all these sacrifices. Now, sometimes I have somebody will say, why were they offering animals as sacrifices? Because God said to. And so then they're kind of, well, why would they do that? Well, you know what? It seems that it's okay for us to offer an animal to eat hamburgers. But to offer one to God to make a point, I think the most noble thing you could have done with an animal was to offer it to God. That's exactly the way God felt. That's the way He wanted the people to feel. So they offered these sacrifices as the law had commanded them to. And so they offered these sacrifices, and this was a good day. This was a good day. Oh, but it wasn't to last long. Well, let me see. Okay. Look at the very top. Ezra learns distressing news. Okay, Donald, how about reading that one? Ezra 9, 1 through 4. Would you gather that Ezra was upset? He was upset. Was it apparent that he was upset? Sometimes somebody needs to get upset. This was not a time for him to be cool. This was a time for him to let everybody know, I am terribly upset. Now then, most of us, I think, know what was the problem here and why it was so bad. So what are they saying? What are they reporting? The princes and everything. What are they telling Ezra? What's been going on? The intermarriages. Well, why was that wrong? They were pagan. They were unbelievers. What did the law of Moses say about that? That you were not to do that. It was expressly forbidden. Now, there were exceptions, such as Rahab the harlot, who became an Israelite. Ruth the Moabite, who became an Israelite. But see, that was the point. they converted. They completely renounced their pagan background. They fully accepted the God of Israel, and they became Israelites. Now, anyone that did that, that was a different matter. See? Yes. That's right. That's right. Because one of the points made here is that the holy seed, the holy race, has mingled themselves with the people of the land. Were we keeping up throughout the Old Testament? Were we keeping up with a certain lineage? What was the point about the lineage that we were to keep our eye on? The holy seed, which was ultimately to preserve the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And so it was important. Oh man, there's so much here. Do you remember before the children of Israel went into Egypt? Remember that in the family of Jacob? Remember when they were up there at Shechem? Remember what a man named Shechem wanted to do? You know, he seduced Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. And then he pressed his father to get her for my wife. So they went to Jacob and his sons. Remember how they did that? They went to them and they bargained with them. We'd like to intermarry. And so the sons of Jacob were deceptive. And they said, oh yeah, well yeah, we'll do that. We'll be glad to do that. Only thing is, you're all going to have to be circumcised, because that's a sign of our covenant with our forefather Abraham. So that was just a trick, because when the men of Shechem did that, then on the third day, the sons of Jacob came and they just slaughtered them. They were defenseless. So they slaughtered them. What was the tendency there? What would have happened if that had not occurred? There would have been intermarriage. There was that intermarriage. All right, going down later on in the story of Judah. Remember in the story of Judah? Judah did not marry. He married one of the Canaanite women. What was the danger there? The danger was going to be intermarriage. So one of the reasons for God moving the children of Israel down into Egypt was that they would not be absorbed into the Egyptian population. The Egyptians would keep them at arm's length and separate them out there on the land of Goshen, on the edge of Egypt, and they would not absorb them. That was part of God's plan here, to keep the people pure as much as possible. And now, as Ron pointed out, all during the time there, didn't they leave certain of those pagan tribes, failed to destroy them all? And what did they become? A thorn, a trap, the intermarriage. And the thing about the intermarriage was also that when you married the pagan woman, what was she going to be worshiping? Pagan God, a God other than the God of Israel. So here we are again. Even Solomon, what did he do? He did the same thing. Did it preserve him? Could he say, oh, I'm so strong and so wise? No, he fell too. And Nehemiah makes a point about that. Of course, that's a little bit later here. But Ezra is terribly upset about this because, well, let him speak for himself. Okay? So, in fact, I'm going to go ahead. I don't know who prepared this thing up here. But that's what we want now, is the prayer. All right, so listen now in Ezra 9, verse 5, reading along with me. And at the evening oblation I arose up from my humiliation, even with my garment and my robe rent. And I fell upon my knees and spread out my hands unto the Lord my God. And I said, Oh, my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to Thee, my God, for our iniquities are increased over our head, and our guiltiness is grown up under the heavens. Since the days of our fathers, we've been exceeding guilty unto this day, and for our iniquities have we, our kings and our priests, been delivered into the hand of the kings of the lands, to the sword, to captivity, and to plunder, and to confusion of face, as it is this day. And now for a little moment, grace hath been shown from Jehovah our God to leave us a remnant to escape, and to give us a nail in His holy place, that our God may lighten our eyes and give us a little reviving in our bondage. For we are bondmen, yet our God hath not forsaken us in our bondage, but hath extended loving kindness unto us in the sight of the kings of Persia, to give us a reviving, to set up the house of our God, and to repair the ruins thereof, and to give us a wall in Judah and in Jerusalem. And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken Thy commandments, which Thou hast commanded by Thy servants the prophets, saying, The land unto which you go to possess it is an unclean land, through the uncleanness of the peoples of the lands, through their abominations, which have filled it from one end to the other with their filthiness. Now therefore give not your daughters unto their sons, neither take their daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace or their prosperity forever, that you may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever. And after all that has come upon us for our evil deeds and for our great guilt, seeing that Thou, our God, hast punished us less than our iniquities deserve, and hast given us such a remnant, shall we again break your commandments and join in affinity with the peoples that do these abominations? Wouldest thou not be angry with us till thou hadst consumed us, so that there should be no remnant nor any to escape? O Lord, the God of Israel, thou art righteous, for we are left a remnant that is escaped as it is this day. And behold, we are before thee in our guiltiness, for none can stand before thee because of this. I would say that's a pretty eloquent prayer, wouldn't you? Can you see the issues? The issues going right back to the law. Right back to the law. That's exactly what God had said. So, here in that prayer, we see what's wrong. We see what's wrong. Now, in the first few verses of chapter 10, here's the solution. Here's the solution. Okay, let's see. Who's all right, Ryan, how about reading 10, 1 through 4? You feel comfortable doing that? Would those words be music to his ears, sort of? Cooperation. It's not going to really be that bad. What's going to be involved in settling this issue? What are they going to have to do? Why don't we make a decree? Why don't we just make a decree that all those pagan wives are not pagan anymore? Wouldn't that make a good decree? So, I mean, can you do that? You know, a decree is not going to make a pagan unpagan. Because why are they unbelieving? Because they don't believe. That's not going to work. what are they going to have to do? And they're going to, that's right. And there are children. Now then, in the things that are done, what we see, you know, you say, well, I wonder why it took that long. Well, because they had a lot of complications that had to be dealt with. What's going to be done? You know, something had to be done about the care of those women and the children that were not going to be able to be married to them anymore. Something had to be done. Arrangements had to be made. So it was not just a simple matter. Isn't this a terrible thing? Isn't this a terrible situation? Now, one of the things that we would say is, why did God make them put those wives away? Well, in the first place, if they had done what God had said to begin with, then what would they not have had? They wouldn't have been in this situation. And I've said more over and over again that if you don't follow God's Word and you have the complications that come along when you don't follow God's Word, to straighten out those complications is sometimes an almost impossible task. But if you will follow God's Word, then you don't get into that. It is so much harder to straighten out what is done wrong than to do it right in the first place. And Israel had not done it. They had not done it right in the first place. They had not done it for generations. They had not done it. So what the difficulty is here, it's not God's fault. It is the people's fault for not giving heed to what God had said in the first place. So this has got to be done. And Ezra, the priest, feels that it has to be done. The people are in support of him. And not only Ezra, but we also see Nehemiah agrees they are together on this. Malachi agrees with them on this. This is the law of the Lord. This is what God intended to be done. So So the solution is, as Ryan read, okay, let's make a covenant with our God to put away all the wives, such as are born of them, according to the counsel of my Lord, and of those that tremble at the commandment of our God. So they encouraged him. This was had to be heartening. So he says, all right, everybody come to Jerusalem. He makes a decree. And then arose Ezra and made the chiefs of the priests, the Levites, and all Israel to swear that they would do according to this word. So they swear. Then Ezra rose up from before the house of God and went into the chamber of Jehohanan, the son of Eliashib. And when he came thither, he did eat no bread nor drink water, for he mourned because of the trespass of them of the captivity. And they made proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem unto all the children of the captivity that they should gather themselves together under Jerusalem, and that whosoever came not within 3 days, according to the counsel of the princes and the elders, all his substance should be forfeited and himself separated from the assembly of the captivity. They were pretty serious about this, weren't they? You better come. So it was highly essential, because they had to make a clean sweep of this. So they came. They came, and chapter 10, verses 9 through 11. Gary, can you read that? 10, 9 through 11.
All right, so it's the, what month is it? The ninth month? Now, the seventh month was in October. So, what month would this be? It'd be like December, wouldn't it? November, December. Now, in case you haven't heard, it gets cold in Jerusalem in December. And what was going on? A rain, a heavy rain. So, the response of the assembly. All the assembly said, "As you have said concerning us, so must we do. But the people are many, and it is a time of much rain, and we are not able to stand without. Neither is this a work of a day or two, for we have greatly transgressed in this matter. Now let our princes be appointed for all the assembly, and let all them that are in our cities that have married foreign women come at appointed times, and with them the elders of every city and the judges thereof, until the fierce wrath of our God be turned from us, until this matter be dispatched." So that they said, okay, we'll get this done, but not today because of the circumstances. Now, look, we just want to look at just a very few other things here. Just a very few other things in this. Verses 16 and 17. "The children of the captivity did so, and Ezra the priest, with certain heads of fathers' houses after their fathers' houses, and all of them by their names were set apart. And they sat down on the first day of the tenth month to examine the matter. And they made an end with all the men that had married foreign women by the first day of the first month." So they didn't, what should I say, lollygag? They didn't lollygag around. They got this thing done. But look in verse 18. Verse 18. "Among the sons of the priests, there were found that had married foreign women." What's the point of Ezra saying that? Even among priests. And it names a whole bunch of them there. In verse 23, of the Levites. Verse 24, of the singers and the porters. And then of Israel in verse 25, just to list a whole bunch of these people that had done this. So this was the thing that Ezra had to straighten out. This was the issue that he really dealt with there. And Ezra remained there until the coming of Nehemiah 13 years later. So he's still there when Nehemiah comes 13 years later. So this is the second return. And if you summarize what Ezra's job was, what would you say his job was? To purify the worship and the relationship of the people to the Lord because of the intermarriage with the pagan women. So that's what he had to get done. And it took the time that it took because it was not a matter of saying, well, we'll just leave them. Just leave them. They had to make arrangements, you know, for that. For them to be cared for in some way. Okay. We'll close then for today.